And welcome to the first of a series of three practical podcasts on how to terminate a contract. My name's Ben Longworth, and I'm a partner in Farrer & Co's disputes resolution team.
I'm Charlie Thursden, an associate also in our disputes resolution team.
We deal with a wide range of commercial disputes, but commercial contract disputes are at the heart of what we advise clients about, including disputes with suppliers, with customers, and with business partners. It's a fact of life that circumstances change, sometimes when the virtual ink is still wet on a contract. Global pandemics or invasions happen, parties fail to perform their obligations, new opportunities arise which make existing contracts uneconomic. And the question for businesses is whether they and their counterparties are bound to continue to perform their obligations until the contract comes to an end, or whether it's possible to terminate early, possibly claim damages for any breaches of contract and move on to pastures new. In this first episode, we will look at the potential grounds for termination and determining whether you're able to terminate. The second episode will look at the mechanics of termination and how to avoid some of the procedural pitfalls if you decide to terminate. And in the final episode, we'll look at the consequences of termination for both parties to a contract. We will also be producing a written checklist covering the key points to consider, and that will be available on our website after the third episode of the podcast is released. So without further ado, let's look at the circumstances in which a party can terminate a contract. There are broadly two avenues. The first is by exercising a right to terminate provided for in the contract, and the second is by terminating for repudiatory or fundamental breach of contract at common law. So taking those in turn, Charlie, what are the key contractual routes to look out for?
Well, the first type of clause to look out for is one that allows one or both parties to terminate a contract for convenience by giving the other side notice. Once the notice period has expired, the contract will come to an end. If the contract includes that type of clause, a party can terminate the contract without needing to identify or prove a breach by the other party, so it is the most straightforward and lowest risk route. The downside is that it won't be immediate, and the contract will continue until the notice period has expired, which could be a few months.
Okay, and what's the position if the contract is open-ended or a contract has become a rolling contract after the end of the fixed period, but there's no express termination clause?
It is possible to terminate those contracts on notice, but that would mean implying a term into the contract that it can be terminated on reasonable notice. That may be possible, but it is less straightforward, and the ability to terminate on notice and the length of the notice required may be disputed by the other party.
So terminating on notice is an option to consider, and I guess the shorter the notice period, the more likely it is to be a viable option, even if the relationship has gone seriously wrong. But what if the party who wants to terminate can't wait?
Well, the next thing to look for is whether the contract gives a right to terminate if a specified event happens. The most common of these clauses are force majeure clauses and clauses that allow termination if the counterpart becomes insolvent. In both cases, it's important to look carefully at exactly how insolvency or force majeure are defined in the contract.
Absolutely, that's vital. And we had lots of queries from clients during the pandemic about whether they could terminate contracts because they thought clearly something as huge as the pandemic was a force majeure and would allow them to get out of their contracts. But it's not as straightforward as that. There is no universal definition of a force majeure. You have to look at whether a specific event falls into the definition of force majeure in that contract. And it's also important to remember that force majeure clauses often also set a threshold for the level of impact the event has to have on a party's ability to perform before there is a right to terminate. So sometimes it says the event has to make performance impossible. Sometimes it says it has to make it more difficult, but that has to be looked at. So coming back to the contract, what are the other things that we might look for?
The other key thing to look for is whether there is a contractual right to terminate the breach by the other party. These clauses give the parties more control over when they can terminate, rather than relying on the common law position. Usually, the contract will set a threshold of seriousness and give the innocent party the right to terminate if the breach is sufficiently serious. It is really difficult to capture all the nuances of what might happen in a breach clause, so there are often disputes about whether the threshold has been reached. Some of the most common clauses say that a party can terminate if the other party commits a serious or material breach. The question is then whether what has happened is serious or material. The courts have given some guidance on what these words mean in the context of breach clauses. So, for example, a serious breach has to be more than trivial, but doesn't need to be as serious as a repudiatory breach. The courts will focus on the extent of the impact of the breach on the innocent party, but this is inevitably a fact-specific question, so the courts have not adopted an entirely consistent approach. Similarly, some clauses give a right to terminate if there is a substantial breach. There has also been some inconsistency in how that is treated, but the Court of Appeal has held that it is broadly similar to the test for a repudiatory breach, which we'll come back to. At the other end of the spectrum, some clauses give a right to terminate for any breach. Taken literally, that wording means that a right to terminate arises for even completely trivial breaches. The courts have often shied away from taking that approach on the basis that it doesn't make business common sense. But there seems to be a shift towards giving effect to what the parties have agreed. If you have a contract with an any breach termination clause, you need to be very aware of what your obligations are and ensure that you fulfill them to the letter. Other termination clauses include a right to terminate for some remedial breaches, but only after the party in breach has been given the opportunity to cure the breach. So the party wanting to terminate should check what the procedure and what the cure period is. We'll look at those clauses in a bit more detail in the next episode.
So we've looked at terminating by exercising contractual rights, either by giving notice or by terminating for breach or on specific events. And the other avenue to look at, either if the contract doesn't contain an express termination clause, or if it does but it doesn't quite do the job, is to terminate a contract for repudiatory breach at common law. The first thing to note is that the common law right to terminate generally remains, even if a contract has a termination clause that provides for termination for breach. But it is possible to exclude the common law right of termination using clear language, so it's important to check that language before attempting to terminate for repudiatory breach. As with exercising a contractual termination clause, the key question for a party looking to terminate for repudiatory breach is whether the breach is serious enough to allow the contract terminated. Basic principle is that to be a repudiatory breach, a breach has to go to the heart of the contract and deprive the other party of substantially all of the benefit of the contract. The question of whether that threshold is reached is, again, very fact specific. And as litigators, we know that it's very often a battleground, and there are huge numbers of judgments on the issue to prove the point. We could probably do a whole podcast on that issue, but for now, the takeaway point is that it's really important to think about this question really seriously before attempting to terminate, because as we'll see in our third episode, the consequences of getting it wrong can be very serious. So assuming the party is confident that there's been a repudiatory breach, what next?
Well, it's important to remember that a repudiatory breach doesn't automatically terminate the contract. All it does is give the other party the right either to terminate or to affirm the contract. If the decision is to terminate, that should be communicated clearly to the party in breach. But in some cases, perhaps where there is a long-standing relationship or where it would be hard to find an alternative, it makes more commercial sense to continue with the contract, even if it has been breached, and maybe seek damages for any losses caused by the breach or try to vary the terms of the contract. What is really important to avoid is affirming the contract inadvertently, either through delay or by continuing to perform contractual obligations and expecting the other side to do the same. If the contract is affirmed, the right to terminate is lost, so that could mean being stuck with a contract for a long period.
One other common law route to termination, just to mention in passing, is frustration, which, if it applies, brings a contract to an end immediately and excuses both parties from further performance. It's something that clients often ask about, but it only applies in pretty limited circumstances. Basically, there has to be an unexpected event that's outside the control of the parties that makes it physically or commercially impossible to fulfill the contract. That's a pretty high bar. And for example, even businesses that were seriously affected by the pandemic usually weren't able to escape their contracts on the basis of frustration. So that concludes our brief look at potential avenues for terminating a contract and some of the key issues to think about. The main point to take away is that to reduce the scope for disputes and litigation, it's important to think about which avenue is most appropriate and to make sure you have the right to terminate before taking that step.
In our next episode, we'll look at the formalities around terminating a contract and how to avoid some common pitfalls. We hope you can join us then.